Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them. And our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
It is Thursday, September 27th, 2018, coming to you from Jones Street in downtown Raleigh. This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Thanks for clicking play. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Here for some ruminations on the still cluttered political landscape is Chris Cooper, professor and head of the Department of Political Science and Public Affairs at Western Carolina University. Chris, welcome back. What's up?
A little bit of everything, right? We've got some insanity going on at the state level. We got insanity going on at the national level, so it keeps us all busy.
Let's chat about some political ads. Well, let's do that in a moment. I want to ask you first about the 13th Congressional District. So we're on the fence here, federal and state, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a U.S. House seat held by first-term Republican Ted Budd. He's being challenged by Kathy Manning, a Democrat, who has not ever run for political office before. Just yesterday, the Cook Political Report moved this race from a leans Republican to a toss-up. What are you tracking here? What are your takeaways at the moment from the 13th Congressional?
Yeah, I mean, it's right. It's one of the three interesting districts, I think, in North Carolina, and it's one that's been a little bit surprising in how interesting it's gotten and how quickly. This is a district we would expect to be a Republican district, so I think it's an R plus six district, meaning kind of all else being equal, we would sort of expect the Republican candidate to do better by about 6 percentage points, at least if they follow the presidential vote, which we expect them to. So I think I guess another thing to note is that Budd is extremely conservative, right? I mean, he's not just a Republican. He's actually more conservative by vote than 93% of the Republicans in Congress. So if Budd were to lose, you wouldn't just be replacing a Republican with a Democrat in a district you wouldn't expect to go that way. You'd be replacing an extremely conservative Republican with a Democrat in a district you wouldn't expect to go that way.
He is a member of the Freedom Caucus. It also seems to me like if this is the kind of district that, if indeed it does go Democrat, this isn't a suburban swing district. This is, I mean, if Republicans lose this district, as other guests on the podcast, as other experts I've talked to in the last couple months have said, if this goes blue, you're looking at least 25 or maybe 30 or 35 or 40 seats that are going to shift this fall. It just speaks to the climate that we're potentially going to see, follow through in November. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think one thing we know about American politics in the last couple of decades is they've gotten increasingly nationalized. What that means is these kind of waves people talk about, they really do occur. And when they occur in kind of really broad form, right? It used to be that we'd have these more individualized elections. Somebody might do well from one party in one election. Somebody might do better from another party in a different district. That's not what we're seeing. We're seeing nationalized elections where the climate, the conversation, and the votes tend to track very well from state legislative level all the way up to the presidency.
All right, we're going to shift from the 13th Congressional District here to the 2nd Congressional District. Mm-hmm. That is a district that encompasses kind of the eastern crescent of Wake County, I guess I'd call it, parts of Johnston, and I believe Nash County, Person County might be in there. I'm not going to get into all the nuances of the district, but the upshot here is that George Holding is a three-term Republican congressman. He's being challenged by Linda Coleman, a Democrat who's a former state legislator, has had, I believe, two unsuccessful bids for lieutenant governor. And there was an advertisement that dropped yesterday from the Congressional Leadership Fund. I'm going to play that for you and then just going to let you react to it.
Great.
Career politician Linda Coleman costs us too much. Coleman repeatedly supported higher taxes and fees for North Carolina families, supporting a property tax increase, higher sales taxes, and as a state legislator, Coleman voted for higher income taxes, higher fees for titles and driver's licenses. Linda Coleman even voted for higher taxes on candy and satellite TV. Career politician Linda Coleman taxes us too much. Congressional Leadership Fund is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
All right, what do you take away from that?
First of all, I love that candy taxes are being mentioned in any political ad in 2018. I just think that's a great sort of footnote. My general takeaway is this is a a time-tested Republican playbook, right? So we're hitting her on two things. One, being a career politician, and two, high taxes. And we know the first one's an interesting question, right, coming from a three-term member of Congress calling someone else a career politician. At the same time, people do tend to think that Democrats tax more than Republicans, and that is one issue where Republicans are closer to the average voter than Democrats. And so I think it's a time-tested, predictable, but smart ad. I think as important as the content of the ad is the fact that the ad is being run, right? So if the Republicans are sinking money, looks like about $1.4 million right now into this race, they don't sink money into races that they might not win, you know, that they're going to win easily. So clearly this is a district where Holding is running a little bit scared, and the Republicans know they need to put money into the district.
Do you believe that this how competitive do you believe the second is?
I think it's, you know, it's extremely competitive. I would say it's maybe, at least on paper, a little bit less competitive than the 9th or the 13th. But it's it's one of the three. And I think if the 2nd goes, the 9th will go, the 13th will go, again, with this kind of national trend idea. So those are the three to watch. I mean, we're not having conversations, nor should we, about the 11th, about the 10th, about some of these other districts that are just going to stay in Republican hands. These are the three districts with action.
All right, we're going to shift now from a congressional race to a state Senate race. Sam Searcy is running to unseat Republican incumbent Tamara Berenger. This is a district that is in parts of Wake County, and this is an advertisement I watched for the first time yesterday on Twitter. I do believe it dropped yesterday, so rinse and repeat here.
Okay.
I grew up in Western North Carolina and started working at 14 after my dad's job was shipped overseas and we lost our house to foreclosure. But my folks made sure I stuck with school, so I worked my way through college. I built my own business, creating dozens of North Carolina jobs, but it was public schools that got me here. In Raleigh, I worked with Governor Cooper to strengthen schools, raise teacher pay, and reduce class sizes to give every North Carolina child the opportunity to succeed.
Sam Searcy, Democrat, trying to defeat Republican Tamara Berenger. What'd you hear there?
Yeah, a couple things. One, I mean, he obviously starts with a biography, which is what you do when you're not as well known. So you don't hear a guy like George Holding beginning with his roots and where he came from, because he presumes we know those things. So I think when you're running for state legislature and you're relatively unknown, that's a kind of a smart play at the beginning. The other thing I think is so interesting is this public schools play. So that's one where the Democrats tend to be closer to the average North Carolinian than the Republicans, right? If you think about this idea of issue ownership, that one party tends to own a certain kind of issue, taxes tends to be owned more by the Republicans, education tends to be owned more by the Democrats. So that is a kind of a time-tested play on the Democratic side as well. The other kind of interesting piece, though, is that the Republicans look to me like they're trying to take back this education narrative. So just looking at a bunch of the mailers that we're getting, clearly the Republican Party in the state is trying to say, hey, we're about education too. We're about raising teacher pay. We're about helping kids. We're about public schools. So that issue's a little bit more of a battleground than, frankly, I expected it to be.
Democrats need to pick up 6 seats in the North Carolina Senate to end the Republican supermajority. And I feel like we have seen some of the messaging shift a little bit, more so in the House, but also from the Senate to some extent. Sam Searcy here has the hashtag on his Twitter bio, break the majority, not supermajority, but break the majority. Are Democrats feeling a little overconfident from your perspective?
Well, I don't know if it's overconfidence, right? I mean, a break the majority is going to sell a lot better than break the supermajority. I think the average North Carolinian probably doesn't know enough about the supermajority. I also think that's a lot of characters for Twitter, supermajority.
It is, yeah.
But I think undergirding your point is a good one, right? The supermajority is in play, particularly in the House. The majority is unlikely to be in play. There's a reason that we're going to have elections. There's a reason you play football games. Sometimes App State beats Michigan. Sometimes the Democrats get a huge wave. But it would take a tidal wave, I think, for the Democrats to truly break the majority.
All right. a federal, a state, and for good measure, we're going to move on to ballot referenda. Mm-hmm. What I'm going to do here is I'm actually going to play the first few seconds of an ad, and then we're going to cut out, and then I'm going to play you an updated ad. This is the background here is that, of course, state lawmakers voted to put 6 proposed constitutional amendments on the ballot. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to play part of an ad for you. This is from the effort, which is Stop Deceptive Amendments. They have a website and all that. So
right.
Hang on for me.
Take a closer look at the constitutional amendments Raleigh lawmakers put on the ballot this fall. Every former Chief Justice and every former governor, Democrats and
all right, so I'm going to pause it there. That was just the first few mm-hmm. seconds of that ad. And that ad was, you know, talking about the amendments that are on the ballot this year. And they did happen to tick off a former governor. His name is Pat McCrory. I think people will probably remember him. So they actually recut the ad within the last 24 hours. And here, again, is the beginning of the ad, which is shifted. And I'll let it play all the way through this time.
Mm-hmm.
Take a closer look at 2 constitutional amendments Raleigh lawmakers put on the ballot this fall. Every former Chief Justice and every former governor, Democrats and Republicans, all recommend voting no. They say these amendments are purposely vague, a blank check for politicians who could block corruption investigations and strip all of our courts of independence permanently. The closer you look at these misleading amendments, the worse they get. Vote no.
All right. How about the tone of this one?
You know, I mean, it's interesting, right? I mean, this is a pretty complex thing. You've got 6 amendments, and we're having a conversation about 2. I don't think McCrory's come out against all 6. I think McCrory's come out against a couple of them.
That's correct. The executive powers ones.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think there's a lot going on here. I think this probably benefits the Democrats a little bit more, considering that they're whole idea here is nix on 6, right, is to say no to all 6 of these amendments. And I think what McCrory's asking for is this more nuanced take. Hey, say no to a couple of these and say yes to the remainder of them. Look, these are hard issues to get out in an ad to people. It's hard to say these are 2 that are about power and these other 4 are about other issues, therefore vote no on 2 of these and vote your conscience on the other 4. So I think this is a tough issue, and I think it's one that is unlikely to play well in a 30-second spot.
Right, or in a midterm with historically low voter turnout.
That's right.
I mean, people aren't engaged on these. One thing that strikes me as interesting is, you know, history tells us that this is a year Democrats are supposed to fare well this year, but at the same time, these are amendment questions that they do not support. Is there enough of a groundswell for them to be able to defeat these, or, I mean, is there really a good chance that these amendments are going to be approved?
You know, so if we look historically, right, about 86%, I think, of amendments that we proposed in the state of North Carolina since we got our new constitution in 71, about over 80% of them have been approved. So if you kind of look historically, you say, hey, look, these things are likely to be approved. They wouldn't have been put on the ballot otherwise. At the same time, there is no historical record for 6. Right, we're used to getting 1 of these at a time or 2 of these at a time. We tend to get 1 every couple of years. And so what I'm interested in, and frankly not sure exactly how it's going to work, is if we may actually see a split, if we may see voters vote for some of these and vote against others, which would be a pretty nuanced position. I mean, you've got to figure voter ID by most measures, most public opinion polls looks popular, right? We would think voter ID is the one that's likely to pass. The Marcy's Law of Victims' Rights seems like the kind of thing that is likely to pass and not be that controversial. Constitutional right to hunt and fish, I think similarly doesn't seem to be quite as controversial. The 2 amendments on power, I think we're not really sure what's going to happen. And I would add that it's confusing, right? So, I mean, if we're talking about midterm judicial vacancies, and we're talking about creating a committee to send nominations to a General Assembly, who then sends nominations to a governor, and we're expecting voters to think about this as a change and to look proactively into the future as to what's the best way to govern. Man, that's a lot to ask of voters, and I'm not exactly sure how folks are going to respond.
Quick fact check. Since 1971, 45 proposed amendments have gone before the voters, 37, nearly 82% have passed. Okay. So, yes, above that 80% threshold. All right, let's bounce around. A couple of quick hitter hodgepodge questions here. Over under, number of seats that will flip from Republican to Democrat in the North Carolina House this November, setting the over under at 10.5.
10.5. I would actually go under on this at this point, right? So there's, you know, 9 House seats that Republicans hold right now that by most measures look to be fairly competitive. So even if the Democrats were to sweep those, I think we're probably under 10.5.
Are we under 9.5?
I think we're probably under 9.5. I mean, again, this is, if it's a big wave, it could be different, and we see surprises. And I would add that, you know, I watch stuff pretty closely, and I know other folks do too, but it is hard to predict state legislative seats because our polling is so minimal. The fundraising data tend to lag a little bit behind, so we're depending so much on how the president did in those congressional districts. And so it's hard to say. I mean, the ones out west, you know, I think the 119th is a really interesting race that I don't know that a lot of people are talking about. Mike Clampett is running against Joe Sam Queen. This is, I believe, the third time that those, perhaps the fourth time.
I was going to say part four, but I could be wrong. Yeah, I mean, these two have gone at it, you know, cycle after cycle. And wasn't one of these races decided by like less than 200 votes or something?
It absolutely was. So Clampett ran against Joe Sam Queen and lost. Clampett ran against Joe Sam Queen and lost. Clampett ran against Joe Sam Queen and finally won, and now they are facing off once again. So, yeah, it actually is the fourth round of this. I think it's a really interesting race, and it's a race that's not getting a lot of state attention, and it's a race that's not getting a lot of money invested in it, given how tight it should be. So that's one, at least from the perspective of those of us out west, that I think is absolutely worth watching.
What state has the most gerrymandered maps in the country?
Probably North Carolina. I mean, I think by, you know, whether you look at the efficiency gap or any of these other measures, I think North Carolina, it's one thing we do very well. We gerrymander better than most.
And to be fair, not. I mean, Republicans have done it with perhaps more precision in recent years, but Democrats were also pretty good at it in recent decades.
Democrats were great at it. And I think it's an important cautionary tale, right? We tend to talk, and I certainly do too, and we'll say, hey, these districts really changed from the way they were before 2010, and that's true. But the ones before 2010 were not handed down on stone tablets, right? These were districts drawn by Democrats. So every time we talk about deviations from the past, we need to remember we're talking about deviations from Democrats, from democratically drawn districts.
Best place to kayak in western North Carolina in the month of October.
In the month of October, well, the Chioa is going to have some releases, so I think it's got to be, you got to go near Robbinsville, and you got to kayak the Chioa.
Catamount football team is 3-0 this season, hosts Furman on Saturday. Last time you saw them play in person?
Last time I saw them play in person was last week.
And will you be there this Saturday?
I will be there this Saturday.
Okay,
look
cool.
For me.
Season ticket holder?
I'm not a season ticket holder, but I do go to most games.
Chris Cooper, professor and head of the Department of Political Science and Public Affairs at Western Carolina University. He is a Catamount. Chris, thanks for coming back on the podcast.
Thanks. Enjoyed it as always.
Thanks as always for listening. Subscribe, Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher. You know the drill. Stay up to date with North Carolina political news and also everything that's happening on Capitol Hill at our website, WUNC.org. Thanks as always for tuning in. Leave us a review at any of those locations I mentioned and recommend it to a friend, colleague, or family member as well. The podcast, that is. For Chris Cooper, I'm Jeff Tiberi. We'll talk to you next week.